This interview is brought to you by Panasonic Lumix G cameras for today's photographer. All right, I'm here with Mr. Ben Wilmore. He's a photographer and an educator. He's also a really expert guy in Photoshop. He's been teaching Photoshop for over 20 years. If you Google or go on Amazon and search for his name, you'll find a number of titles that are on Photoshop and all things sort of digital media. We're going to talk about that and his move into sort of ebooks and digital distribution and a whole bunch of other things. So, Mr. Wilmore, Ben, welcome to This Week in Photo.
Hey, great to be here.
It's good to have you. And then we were talking before I clicked the record button that you and I, we were both at the Palm Springs Photo Festival, and we were chatting in the lobby. And I remember you mentioning that you live in a tour bus. First of all, before we jump into the interview, I want to talk about that a little bit. So tell me about the tour bus and why do you live in a tour bus?
Well, I used to live in Colorado up in the mountains. And that was great, but you always go out, if you were going to go shooting, you see the same general things. And being someone that likes shooting landscapes for one subject matter, I just found I was always seeing a similar look and had all these dreams of going to all sorts of different locations. And once I went on vacation and I did 8 national parks in 10 days.
Eight parks in 10 days.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Colorado, Utah kind of area, and absolutely loved it and just thought, when can I do that again? And the answer was not soon. And then I was sick of things like having a mortgage and maintaining a yard and everything else. And so I decided to buy a tour bus, sell all my stuff. And now we travel to between 12 and 30 states a year and just search out whatever it is we think would be interesting to shoot. And it's been a great time. This is my 7th year now.
Now you speak as well. Like I mentioned, we were at the Palm Springs Photo Festival. So you drove the tour bus to Palm Springs and you just parked somewhere. So no hotel fees, none of that stuff. Your house, you're a turtle. So your house is with you wherever you go, right?
Well, when I speak at events, most of them I fly to because I don't want to drive way across the country to get to an event and be stuck there unless there's something I really want to shoot there. So I would say 80 to 90% of the events I speak at, I happen to fly to them. But on occasion, if there happens to be an event near where I'm going to be, then I'll drive to it. So here I have an event coming up in Seattle next week, and I wanted to explore Washington and Oregon during July and August because that's when it's not raining like crazy here. And so I happen to be up here in the bus. But otherwise, it would have flown.
Wow. So what's the best thing about living, the photographer living with his, you know, everything you have with you? What's the best thing and what's the worst thing?
Well, there's a couple best things. The one is just imagine being able to take a map of the U.S. and whenever you hear of something that sounds interesting visually, you can put a little point on the map to say, I'd like to go there one day, and then actually be able to do that without having to take out vacation time or without having to be on assignment or without having the pressure of having to make money off of that shot to pay for that trip. Instead, it's just like going to the grocery store. It's just, who cares? You're there. So that's part of it. The other part is when you do that, imagine sleeping in your own bed instead of an uncomfortable or just unusual bed at a hotel or somewhere else.
Yeah.
Or park your house right across the street from whatever it is you want to shoot. Pop in, take a nap, and then come out and shoot. I've been at places where I've shot it for 24 hours or 3 days or whatever, and I'm just walking in and out of the bus to shoot it. And it's much different than having to have a rental car and having to drive to wherever a hotel is, which isn't always at a convenient location.
Yeah, that's great. So what's the worst thing? What do you just absolutely hate about living mobily?
Well, the biggest challenge of living mobily is internet access.
Right.
If you're used to being in a home where you have really fast internet, not going to have it overly fast, and there's usually going to be a bandwidth cap where if you go above it, you pay a lot more money. And so if you're used to watching, like downloading a lot of videos to watch or a lot of streaming video, it can get where you get over your bandwidth cap and it starts getting expensive. And in some locations, you might have extremely slow internet because you're in the middle of somewhere and I'm relying on like a Verizon card. And so that can be an issue. But yeah. Now Verizon is massively expanding their 4G network. Crazily expanding it. And that's something we want to upgrade to and really take advantage of. So with that, if anybody's into it, look into a company called Millennicom, because they sell Verizon minutes, but you have no contract. You have at least four times the bandwidth for the same price and all that kind of stuff. So that's one little...
All right, I'll check them out. Millennicom. We'll put that in the notes for this episode. So that's cool. I mean, we could go on about that adventure, but there's all kinds of stuff I want to talk to you, because I know you have you got to get out of here. So let's just talk about light painting. So I know that's one of your passions, light painting and HDR and that sort of thing. So I've seen, so first of all, for the folks that may not know what light painting is, can you give us just the layman's definition of what it is to paint with light?
Sure. Well, imagine finding a scene that is completely dark. You know, it's midnight outside and you find something, or you're in your basement, no lights on. So if you set up your camera and did a 30-second exposure, what comes out is black. Mm-hmm. And so then you do a long exposure, let's say it's 30 seconds, and you can walk right into the scene, even in the camera's view, and with a flashlight, light the scene. And therefore, you can control exactly how bright every area is. And if you're shooting, let's say, a person and you want the attention to be drawn to their face, just spend a little bit more time adding light there and it'll be brighter. People's eyes will be attracted to it. If you've got an ugly background that just doesn't really help the scene, don't light it at all and it'll be solid black. And it's just, to me, one of the most creative outlets with my photography that I've run into.
So how do you gauge that? So I mean, like say you're lighting a scene, you know, like you said, you frame the thing up. Say you're doing an interior shot of, say, a really nice gourmet kitchen. All the lights are off. You set the camera up on a tripod. You aim it at the kitchen, and you want to paint in the hanging pots from the ceiling. You want to get the oven. You want to get, you know, put a light in the stove and all that stuff. How do you know how long to paint them for? Is it just trial and error, or there's some math or technique to it?
Well, it's quick trial and error, meaning you do a test exposure and you go and light the pots very briefly, just for a couple seconds. And then you go back and look at the camera and see if that's blown out to solid white or if it's too dark, and you either adjust your aperture setting or you adjust your ISO setting to brighten or darken the result, and you take another shot. And after doing about three test shots, you get a pretty good handle for exactly how bright it is. It's going to vary a lot based on how new are the batteries in your flashlight, what kind of flashlight, and how close you're holding the flashlight to the subject.
Yeah. And do you need to be dressed in black? I would imagine you probably don't want to be in all white, so the light reflecting off of whatever you're painting gets on you and you appear in the shot. So are you wear like a ninja suit when you're in there? How does that work?
Most of the time, there's no need for it. But if I was shooting something like a motorcycle that had a lot of chrome or something else where the light might reflect off, then I might need to think about it. But most of the time, the light source is being held at arm's length away from my body, and it's never pointing towards me. And it makes it so, unless the thing that I'm shooting is chrome or stainless steel or something else where it's like a mirror reflecting it back, most of the time, I don't have to worry about it. But on those occasions where I have a reflective subject matter, then I might have to think about wearing black. And I have done it where I wear a black long sleeve shirt and black gloves, but that's rare.
Yeah. And then what about gear? I mean, I'm sure you could use pretty much any flashlight, but power varies with those flashlights. And then there's the ones with the bulbs and then LEDs. What advice would you give to photographers that are looking to try this? So they go to Home Depot and buy what?
I would stay away from the flashlights you get for free at trade shows, you know, with somebody's logo on it. Usually they have like six or eight bulbs in it, and they always put out soft light, and it's harder to get control over what you're doing because you can't get just a harder spot where the light hits. A single bulb light is a nice way to start. LED lights will be a little cooler, but you can adjust for that with white balance. And my absolute favorite flashlights are by LED Lenser. because you can focus them more effectively than most as far as controlling how big the beam is. And if you press the button lightly a second time, you go to a tenth the power. I think it's a tenth. And it makes it so if you're lighting from far away to begin with, you can use full power. And then if you have to come up real close for something, you can pop it down to the lower power level and not get too much light on it when you're lighting close. But those are expensive flashlights.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you're going to get into this, it, you know, invest in your gear, right?
Yeah. Well, I say I'd use that one flashlight probably about 80 to 90% of the time. So if you're going to do a lot of it, it makes sense. If you're just going to casually do it, use any flashlight.
That's cool. So speaking of casually doing it, so if I want to try this tonight, I want to set up my tripod and get all this stuff. So I have a reasonable DSLR that I can use. So what settings am I using? Am I putting it on bulb or what am I doing?
Well, if you're not used to doing it, I would just start off with a 30-second exposure. Because with bulb mode, you have to be able to both open and close the shutter, and you probably need a cable release then that locks. You might or might not have that. But if you just do a 30-second exposure, put your camera on a solid surface, tripod would be great, but you can put it on a table or anything. And I usually start at F11, ISO 100, just you got to start somewhere. And you'll want to focus when you're pointing the flashlight at the subject and then click your lens over to manual focus. Otherwise, when you press the shutter, it won't do anything because it'll be searching for focus. And when it can't find it, it won't take the picture. Right. Then just start your exposure, walk into the scene, and make sure your body is not blocking the camera's view of whatever area you're lighting. So stand off to the side a little bit, at least at an angle, you know, so your body is not between the camera and the area you're lighting. And light something, move it around a little bit, just act like you have a hose with some water in it, and you're just trying to wet down your subject. And then go back to the camera, see if it's too bright or too dark. If it's too bright, close down your aperture. If it's not bright enough, up your ISO setting and experiment about 3 shots until you get the brightness right, and then experiment. If you want to really get started, I have an ebook on the subject, and you can find out about it on my website, but there's a free sample chapter. And sample chapter tries to get you started with your first light painting. And so that's where I would go to just get a general feeling for what you should do to get started.
And where's that ebook at?
My website is digitalmastery.com. And if you go there, it should just be on the homepage. You'll see an area that talks about the light painting ebook. And if you click on it, so you get to the page for the ebook, you will find a area I'm looking right now. It's near the bottom of the page. It says download sample pages of the ebook. And if you click that, you'll get a PDF that tries to just give you enough to get you started on your first light painting.
Nice. Very cool. I love that. So then switching gears from light painting into one of your other passions, and that's high dynamic range photography, or HDR. So I'm getting the feel here that you like playing with light. You like, you know, just manipulating light and seeing what you can do with it inside the camera, you know, and doing, you're using both sides of the equation in the computer and in the lens. So tell me about HDR and what you like about that so much.
Well, in general, with photography in general, I find that if your audience is non-photographers, and that's who's looking at your work, to give them something to really suck them in, it's usually presenting something they're not used to seeing. And that's why, partially why people are out shooting sunrise and sunset, because if you go to a national park and you shoot sunrise, there might be a dozen people where you're shooting, but you leave at 10 a.m. and the droves of people are coming in, and they completely miss that. They're leaving before sunset so they can go to dinner. They completely miss that, and they see it when the light just sucks. And so doing that, or getting away from shooting at eye level, shooting at a radical angle or something, presents them with something they're not used to seeing. For me, light painting and HDR is just another method for doing that. Creating something that they can't see with their normal eyes, and therefore they might be more interested in compared to the photos they're making with their iPhone or anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. So then are you mixing these techniques at all? Because as I think through this, I'm like, what if you put the peanut butter in the chocolate? Like, what if you mixed light painting with HDR? Have you ever done anything like that?
Well, the problem with doing that is that HDR requires you to take more than one exposure. And if you're doing light painting, it's not going to get the same streak of light that you paint onto the image in more than one exposure.
Yeah.
I haven't thought about combining those together, but I have thought about other things. Like I was just out the other day shooting with a lens baby. A lens baby can give me all this selective focus, you know, which is great. So then my brain says, why not do lens baby light paint? And I haven't done that yet, but that's probably the next light paint I'll do, because I just like mixing it up and trying to push my photography to create things that people aren't used to seeing. So those people that are used to seeing light painting, I doubt they're used to seeing selective focus light painting.
I love that. I love the mixing of that, because it's all the same, right? I mean, it's all you're playing with photons, right? You're just finding new and inventive ways to get those photons on the sensor. I love that. So you mentioned your ebook, which, by the way, again, you can find at digitalmastery.com, the light painting ebook. So let's talk about books in general. So we were looking at Amazon and before we started, and I was looking at this long list of Ben Wilmore books that you've written, and you were telling me that you were making the move gradually away from writing static, traditional printed printed books and moving more into the ebook realm. You want to talk about that a little bit and why you see a need for that?
Yeah. I've written many, many books on Photoshop, and I find the process of writing a printed book to be overly time consuming from the time you start the process to the time the first reader gets the book, and that the financial equation with that is not always in the author's favor. So you do a tremendous amount of work to make a lot of money for someone else. Some publishers will do a great job with marketing. Others won't do that much. And if they're not doing that much, then you're doing most of the work. That's not always true, though. Sometimes they do great marketing and they can really help the book be a success. But the main thing is, with a printed book, you have to finish every chapter. And then that needs to be edited, laid out, printed, distributed before anybody can look at it. With an ebook, you don't have to have 700 pages. You can do an ebook like my light painting ones, 94 pages long. That would be a little bitty printed book. It wouldn't do well in Barnes & Noble because it would look more like a little pamphlet. It looks smaller than a magazine kind of thing. But with an ebook, it's something where we can keep the price down really low, and that can be a very nice focused book for you. Then you can keep writing more and more of those and just release them as you're done, and you can be much more productive without having to take out so much time to write a full printed book.
Yeah. Yeah. And not to mention the multimedia aspects of it, right? Because like audio and video and to some degree, some interactivity, if you're doing, I guess, an iBook through Apple, is that what you're considering doing as you move into this space?
Yeah, in general, I am. Right now, my first ebook is just a PDF, and I just want to try it to see how does it sell. And I have two more ebooks that I'm in the works on. I can't really mention them yet until I'm close enough to being done. Otherwise, people start asking like crazy about them. And once I get those three out and see how they do, then I'm going to see how much more time do I want to invest in them. Ideally, though, I would like to have movies embedded within the ebook. I would like to have it right next to whatever technique you're talking about. You could click on something and it might open the picture I was working on within Photoshop, so you could practice on that image and just have a much more interactive experience.
Yeah.
I haven't done that yet. You got to start somewhere. So I'm starting out with a PDF.
Nice. Okay, cool. And so you'll let me know when you get that thing out so we can talk about it. I'm excited to see that. And I love the whole idea of using the internet, because it's like the tide of digital distribution keeps rising and rising with like the tablets and the iPhones and the Android tablets and you know, all this stuff getting more and more prevalent, which means people have the means to read these things. Back when PDFs were just getting started and ebooks started taking hold, it was download the PDF and you can read it, but you got to be in front of your computer to read it. And now that has changed significantly. I can throw an ebook on my iPad and read it wherever I am. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what you do with that.
Oh, yeah. I'm really looking forward to exploring that area. And it'll just take some time to get used to the technology and to fully implement it.
Yeah. So then let's talk about, speaking of technology, let's talk about Creative Live, which is, you know, a workshop. You have a workshop coming up on August. It's this month. We're in August right now, August 22nd. And it's called Photoshop for Photographers. Tell me about that. What is Photoshop for Photographers?
Okay, well, this is my first event with Creative Live, and looking at their catalog of classes, I just thought, where might I fit best in there as a first class? And I thought, why not do it where I cover Photoshop, but from a photographer's angle, where I completely ignore all the stuff photographers wouldn't be interested in, so I can really show the absolute essentials, what I use every single day on every single image I open, and spend 3 full days doing that.
Wow.
What's nice?
Go ahead.
The main thing with the Creative Live, though, instead of just recording that as, let's say, a DVD like I might for other people, having the live aspect where the class is actually free when it's live. Anywhere in the world, you can tune in and see it live. But it's not just that you can see it. You can also interact with it. There'll be a small audience there that'll ask questions. And then anybody that's watching it online, they can ask questions and just put out comments. And then there'll be people there monitoring those comments. They'll pick out what they think are the most interesting ones and throw them up to me. So you can kind of somewhat control where I deviate and how deep I get in different areas by throwing out some questions there, and it will change the flow of the class. And so I'm looking forward to that part of it.
So throw me a couple of tips out. So, you know, I'm a late bloomer, so I just downloaded and installed CS6, Photoshop CS6, and I'm happy with it so far, you know. And the reason that I've delayed, I was on CS4 before, so I skipped 5 entirely. So I was on CS4, and I decided, you know, after interviewing Brian O'Neill Hughes over on the Adobe team, on the Photoshop team, I was like, okay, I got to get this. So I downloaded it and been playing with it, and I'm happy with it. But from your standpoint, you know, I'm going to the source, the guru of photography here. What are the main things inside of CS6 that I need to pay attention to?
Well, the main thing, especially if you're coming from 2 versions old, are the improvements in Camera Raw. It's dramatic. In previous versions of Photoshop, if you moved up, there were 3 sliders within Camera Raw that could really mess up your images, but they were sliders that you also really liked what they were trying to do. And those were the recovery, fill light, and clarity sliders. Those sliders, people love what they did, and if you look at the image when you're zoomed out, it looks great. But if you move them beyond about the halfway point, and then you zoomed up on your image 100% view and truly inspected it, especially with fill light, you'd find that if you saw a dark area that touched a really bright area, there'd be a double line there. It would look like somebody traced the edge with a pen.
Okay, I'm afraid now. I don't want to go back and look at my my images. So then what about the parity between Lightroom and CS6 with the raw processing engine? Because I'm up to speed on Lightroom, you know, because that's one of the main reasons why I hadn't upgraded, was because I figured I'd do most of my work in Lightroom, and heavy lifting and, you know, manipulations, removing telephone poles and that sort of thing using Photoshop. Is the raw processing engine has parity, right?
Yes, it's the same math behind the scenes between Camera Raw and Lightroom. The sliders are named the same. They do the exact same thing. So if you've been using Lightroom, then that's great. And I agree with the way you think, as far as do as much as you can in Lightroom, and hopefully in a lot of images, that's all you need. And then go to Photoshop only when you need something Lightroom can't do. But what that means is also with Lightroom, if you used it not with the newest version, but 1 version old or older, and you brought up recovery, fill light, or clarity beyond the halfway point, it didn't guarantee you're going to have issues with your image, but there was a good chance that if you zoomed up to 100% view and really inspected it, you would notice that where a dark area touches a bright one, there'd be a double edge, or you can have glowing edges around things, and that doesn't happen with the new version. And it makes it so you can push the sliders much further than previously advised and get much more out of those images.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, definitely have to check that out. So let's just switch it a little bit as we wind this down to, so we're talking about we're talking about Photoshop and Lightroom. But what about from the standpoint of using plugins? For example, right now, you know, I like to talk about things that are on my brain right now. So I'm preparing later to do a shoot, you know, do a model shoot, and the young lady, and I was talking to Sue Bryce earlier and looking at her Creative Live workshop, and she mentioned that she uses the Portraiture plugin. So I went to the Imaginomic, I forget, I don't know how they pronounce it. I went over to their website to look at the Portraiture plugin, which looks amazing, you know, to give you a kickstart on sort of retouching before you get into the really nitty gritty pixel type stuff. But my question for you is, on the plugin side, when you buy plugins, do you buy plugins for Lightroom? Because most of these guys have Lightroom plugins that have parity with their Photoshop plugins, or do you buy Photoshop plugins and go that way? What would you suggest?
Well, for me personally, I put the plugins into Photoshop because I'm most likely going to be doing other things in Photoshop. But having said that, if I didn't own Photoshop, if I just had Lightroom, I wouldn't buy Photoshop just so I can put plugins in it if I have a plugin that could work within Lightroom. And if you go in and use something like, let's say, Perfect Layers?
Yeah.
Semi-replacement for Photoshop if you only need certain areas of Photoshop. So it can be where you can either just use Lightroom and then add plugins, which can make things a little faster and a little less expensive than buying Photoshop. Or if you own both, I mean, I'm such a Photoshop guy, though. I've used Photoshop for, you know, over 20 years. And so I'm in my head, I'm so used to it. And to me, Lightroom is more of a new thing. It's like, oh, that's great. I can add that to my workflow. But my brain thinks so much about Photoshop that I put them in Photoshop just because there's so much else I want to do with Photoshop. I think I can bring my images so much further if I want to go beyond what Lightroom offers.
Love it. Love it. Well, we'll leave it at that. We could talk for hours, I'm sure. but if listeners, if you want to chat with Ben for hours, just like we mentioned earlier, his Creative Live workshop is coming up August 22nd. And if you happen to miss that, you can always go and get it on the replay at the Creative Live website. So definitely check it out. I would suggest going for the live one, though, because A, it's free, and B, you can interact with him online, like Ben was saying. So Ben, where would you like people to go to find out more about you?
Well, my main website is digitalmastery.com. One thing is, I'm working on the photography section of that site, so I have an alternative way to present the photography, and that is a website called thebestofben.com.
Cool.
Soon that will be wrapped into the Digital Mastery site. Wanted to mention one thing real quick, which is with Creative Live, I actually have two classes coming up. The first one is the 22nd through the 24th, which is Photoshop for Photographers. And the second one is on the 25th, which is on light painting. It's a full day on light painting.
Oh, cool. All right. And that's in the same deal, right? You can interact and then download it later, right?
It's free while it's live. So if you can tune in on those exact dates, you can see the whole thing for free. It's only if you miss those dates or you decide you need to be able to see it again or something, then you could purchase the course.
Now, just before I let you go, on the light painting course, are you going to take everyone from soup to nuts? Like, okay, this is the gear I use, this is the camera, this is the, you know, just like from beginning to end?
Yeah, that's the plan.
Awesome. Very cool. All right. See, this Creative Live stuff is messing me up, man. It's messing with my schedule because I want to see all these crazy workshops that are really cool. Well, Ben, thank you for taking the time today. Where are you, by the way? Where is Ben?
I am about an hour from Seattle right now.
An hour from Seattle. Are you in the tour bus?
Yes.
Very cool. And by the way, I said, where is Ben? That is his Twitter handle. Where is Ben on Twitter? So if you want to follow him there, definitely check him out. So Ben, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it was good. Great to be here.
Awesome.